May it please the court, my name is Randall Robbins and I represent the appellant in this action, which is the estate of Connie Swann. I was also trial counsel. This was a medical negligence case that was tried to a jury and resulted in a verdict of a breach in the standard of care, but no harm proximately caused by that breach. We have appealed on the grounds that comments made by defense counsel during closing were improper, unduly prejudicial, and in some instances, plain error. We have also appealed on the grounds that the finding of the jury that the breach in the standard of care did not proximately harm the plaintiff was against the great weight of the evidence. I would like to briefly summarize the facts of the case to put in context these arguments. In 1988, Dr. Balin, the defendant, diagnosed a left breast cancer in Connie Swann's breast and performed a partial mastectomy and ordered radiation therapy. In 2003, Ms. Swann returned to Dr. Balin's office because an ultrasound in January and again in April of that year had identified a 1.7 by 1.2 by 0.9 centimeter area, which was consistent with scarring, and within it a 7 millimeter cyst. Because this had persisted from January to April in these two ultrasounds, the radiologist recommended or suggested MRI or biopsy to further confirm the etiology of this, of what he identified because of her history of breast cancer. On May 29, 2003, Dr. Balin performed what should have been a biopsy. And under the standard of care, a biopsy involves taking only that much breast tissue as is needed to confirm a diagnosis. In Ms. Swann's case, this was especially important because 5 years before, she had radiation to the breast, and it was uncontested and disputed that radiation therapy to breast tissue causes less vascularity, less blood supply, and thus a surgical wound will be subject to healing complications. The bigger the surgical wound, the greater the risk of healing complications. Instead of biopsying the area identified by the radiologist, Dr. Balin, in his exact words, said, "I decided I wanted to do a wide resection because I am afraid there might be recurrence of breast cancer. If so, then I do not need to do a biopsy, but do a one sitting surgery and excise at the same time to provide a cure." He was then asked, just to make sure his testimony was clear, question, "You did a wide resection instead of a biopsy to provide a cure in case Connie had recurrent breast cancer?" And he answered, "That's correct." The wide resection that he removed was 16 by 7 centimeters by 2 centimeters. And this clay model was used during the trial to demonstrate the size of the breast tissue that was removed during this wide excision instead of a biopsy. The area that was identified on the ultrasound is this area, which is 1.7 by 1.2 by 0.9 centimeters. And within that was a 7 millimeter area identified as a probable cyst.
Going back to the first demonstrative exhibit, is that the actual scale of the mass that was removed by Dr. Balin?
That's correct. Both are. This is the scale of the size of what the ultrasound identified, and this is the scale of the size of what was actually removed in the wide excision in lieu of the biopsy.
So if only a biopsy had been done, then it would have removed only the small mass?
It would have removed approximately this much of the tissue. All that's needed is to remove a portion of the area in question in order to make a diagnosis. And it's especially critical in this case where it was known that she had radiation to the breast, so reduced vascularity and subject to wound healing complications. The wound never healed and turned black, and there's a photograph of that, A20, in the appendix. This photo was shown to Dr. Balin, and he said that's what the wound looked like when he was treating her in August. His advice to her was to return in 5 weeks. She didn't. She instead went to another general surgeon for a second opinion who then sent her to a plastic surgeon who sent her to an infectious disease specialist who sent her to a chest surgeon, and she eventually had a complete mastectomy with two ribs removed and part of her chest wall because that black area depicted in the photograph was an aspergillus mold growing within the wound. Plaintiff contended at trial that Dr. Balin breached the standard of care because he performed a wide resection when the standard of care was to perform a biopsy.
And the jury agreed, correct?
The jury found that he was negligent. There was other grounds, but that was the driving ground. And if they found that, which is our belief, there was automatically harm because he removed tissue than he had to.
All right, wait a second. When you say that's our belief, how do you make the allegation that that's what the jury found?
Were there interrogatories? There were not. And there were essentially two allegations of negligence. One was that he took too much tissue, and the second was that he didn't treat the wound post-operatively as he followed it and it turned black, and he did nothing about that.
And what did the jury find?
The jury found that he breached the standard of care, but there was no designation as to which was the breach. Either way, we believe that it's against the great weight of the evidence, but the more compelling of the arguments, we believe, is that he admitted that he did a wide resection instead of a biopsy in order to do one sitting surgery, his words, to cure her so she wouldn't need more surgery. The standard of care, undisputedly, is that you have to do a complete mastectomy if there's recurrent breast cancer, so
okay.
That surgery would not cure her.
Let me back up a little so that I can be clear.
Yes.
You allege that the doctor committed malpractice in two respects. First, by doing this resection instead of a biopsy.
Correct.
And second, after having done that, by failing to properly treat her post-operative condition.
That's correct.
Okay. And after everybody presented all their evidence, the jury says, we find Dr. Balin was negligent.
Correct.
They actually answered a question that said that, or
yes.
What?
Okay. Yes.
So they were asked, do you find him negligent? Answer, yes. But nothing about what aspect of his treatment was negligent.
Correct.
Okay. Then the jury goes to part two and says, but we conclude that the negligence did not cause any injury.
Correct.
And am I correct in surmising that the reason that they could have found that result would be because of the evidence that the prior radiation had so affected the tissue that, basically any time you have to cut into it, you have this risk of the infection and failure to heal and so forth, and that it is caused by the radiation, the prior radiation, and not by anything with respect to either the size of the resection versus a biopsy or the treatment that was given afterwards.
If I follow that correctly, I think what you're asking me is, could the jury have found that he didn't harm her even though he took
right.
The amount of tissue that he did? I think they're inconsistent arguments, because if he took more tissue than he was supposed to under the standard of care, she's automatically harmed because she lost part of her body that she should not have lost. And he placed her at risk, increased risk of harm, which are arguments that were presented in our pretrial stipulation through the testimony of Dr. Reiner, our expert general surgeon, and in my closing argument. So I don't think you can get from point A to point B, accepting point A as being true.
So what you're saying is that having found him negligent, the jury had to find that negligence caused at least some injury.
Correct.
And the jury found no injury.
Correct.
Caused by his negligence. What if the jury rejected part one and found that the negligence was in the failure to adequately treat the wound?
We believe that Dr. Daniel, the only plastic surgeon that testified, who was the treating plastic surgeon, testified that the Aspergillus infection caused him to perform greater surgery than he would have performed had this infection been treated and not been in the condition advanced as far as it was. It's documented in the medical records that it was down to her chest wall, down to the bone. That's in the cardiac thoracic surgeons, the thoracic surgeons' medical records. So Dr. Daniels' testimony as a plastic surgeon was unrebutted because he's the only plastic surgeon that testified as to his part of the surgery. He said it would have been much more limited and not nearly as involved if that Aspergillus had been treated.
And that was something that was Dr. Balin's responsibility in terms of post-operative care?
Yes, absolutely. That was part of the case. It was undisputed that he was treating her and that he had a duty to treat her post-operatively. That was not in dispute.
And it was also undisputed that it was a breach of the standard of care for her to have developed this fungus?
I mean, not a breach to have developed the fungus per se, a breach to not have diagnosed and treated it. I mean, Dr. Balin testified that the wound looked like that photograph. And his own expert said if it looked like that photograph, it's infected, more likely than not by the Aspergillus. And Dr. Balin's advice at the time was to come back in 5 weeks. I mean, he failed to recognize that this was an infected wound that his own expert said he was required to recognize. If I may just briefly turn to some of the improper comments that were made in closing argument. The closing arguments that were made, the defense counsel was asking for adverse inferences because a radiologist was not called by the plaintiff in their case. And they argued to the jury that the whole case turned on the fact that we didn't call that radiologist. The exact words were, don't you think Mr. Robbins would have brought that radiologist in to tell you that this case would probably be over if he did that? What does it suggest to you that that radiologist isn't here testifying when the plaintiffs have the burden of proof? We objected. No curative instruction was given. There was no grounds.
Did you ask for a curative instruction?
I objected at sidebar, and the judge told me just to argue in rebuttal. Yes, I did. And he said he wasn't going to give it and that my response should be in my rebuttal. So I gave a rebuttal, but it didn't cure the fact that this was linked. This missing witness, adverse inference.
What was the curative instruction that you asked for?
That it's an unfair argument that I said this radiologist was equally available to the defense as it was to me, and they could have called him if they wanted to call him. I didn't even think to call him. This argument that he had to be there to testify as to what his report said was never raised by any witness in this trial. Even Dr. Balin himself said the area of concern identified in the ultrasound report was too small for him to aspirate. So there wasn't an issue. I didn't believe there was an issue. I didn't know there was an issue about whether the radiologist's report identified what it identified until, in closing arguments, the argument was made that the whole case turned on the fact that the plaintiff didn't produce the radiologist, and given that the plaintiff has the burden of proof, they didn't meet it.
And when you say that the witness was equally available to both parties, you mean either party could subpoena the witnesses?
Could have. I never thought about it. I honestly never thought that I needed to bring, that this radiologist needed to be in the courtroom. We had a lot of witnesses in this case, a lot. And I didn't think that I had to bring a radiologist in who probably never saw Connie Swan, who probably had a technician perform the ultrasound, and he interpreted the imaging study. It's unlikely that he even remembered Connie Swan, since he probably never met Connie Swan. But it never occurred to me that I should be calling that witness, and it certainly never occurred to me that the whole case, the jury should be told the whole case turned on my failure to call this witness.
But this wasn't this focus on whether Dr. Bailon was negligent or not?
The issue was, this went right to this central issue of the case, and that's whether or not Dr. Bailon took more tissue than he should have. And the ultrasound only identified what I showed you, and that's this area when he removed this. And our point was, the radiologist identified this area, and there's no justification for taking this much. And the argument was, if the radiologist only identified this area, he would be in here testifying and telling you that. And the fact that he isn't in here testifying tells you that that's not true. All I did was take his report at face value, and so did Dr. Bailon when I cross-examined him. And to turn that into a situation where plaintiff hasn't met their burden of proof because plaintiff doesn't call this radiologist, who's not uniquely in my control, is unfair. It's improper. It's unduly prejudicial. This was a very close case. The trial court's decision mentioned that several times. And in a close case such as this, it crossed the line to tell the jury that there's an adverse inference that should be drawn because I didn't call a radiologist, because the plaintiff didn't call Dr. Dixon Whitmer, who the defense knew I had sued. I had a case against her. I wasn't going to call her. At her deposition, discovery deposition, she was visibly upset at seeing me. And after that deposition, the defense sends her a letter outlining the theory of her case. And at her trial deposition, she all of a sudden becomes a key witness for the defense. But there's never any mention in testimony, did Mr. Robbins try to call you? Could he have called you? Would you have talked to him? But in closings, he tells the jury that I could have called her anytime I wanted. I could have talked to her anytime I wanted. And again, trying to get the jury to draw an adverse.
Let's assume that we agree with you that the comment was improper. Wasn't the ultimate outcome in your favor on the issue of negligence?
It was, but she also testified on the issue of causation. So they were trying to give her greater weight by saying that I was afraid of calling her as a witness, that I was trying to hide the truth. They did the same thing with one of my experts. They told the jury. Dr. Dixon Whitmer, that I was afraid of calling her as a witness because she would not have been a favorable witness. I didn't call her as a witness because I had sued her. And I believed that her response would be that she didn't want to. She didn't want to talk to me, and that was pretty clear when we showed up at the discovery deposition. The last point I want to make, because I see that I wanted to reserve some time, is that the argument was made that I aided and abetted one of my experts in changing their opinion, and this was made in closing argument. It was said that the expert changed his opinion, and Mr. Robbins and the expert changed his opinion, and what does that tell you about what Mr. Robbins and the expert thought about their case? That's inflammatory and unduly prejudicial. The witness explained that he had not read the defendant's deposition before his expert discovery response was submitted, and he read it before his discovery deposition. And he explained that at his discovery deposition that because Dr. Bailon said he performed a wide resection instead of a biopsy, that was a breach. But to tell the jury that I had conspired with my expert is inflammatory. That's plain error. This was a close case, and arguments of this
nature. Testimony related to negligence or causation or both?
That went to causation because it was his opinion that she took too much. Well, both, because taking too much tissue was a breach, and taking too much tissue exposed her to the harm that followed.
You're almost out of your rebuttal time.
I see that.
You want to save what's left?
Yes. Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm John Ballinger, counsel for Dr. Bailon. I was also trial counsel for Dr. Bailon. I was planning to start with the closing comments, but I think I'll reverse it and start with the weight of the evidence argument. Justice Berger, you were correct in honing in on this issue that there were several claims of negligence that were made against Dr. Bailon, that he didn't culture this wound when it looked like it was infected, that he didn't refer Ms. Swan to an infectious disease specialist, Then prior to that, that he took too much tissue in the course of the biopsy. And the verdict that the jury rendered was just that he was negligent. And there is no record for the court to refer to know whether there was a jury finding that the tissue issue was the negligence or that one of the other management of the case, management of the infection issues, was the problem. But there was...
Let me stop you at that point. If we assume for a moment that the jury found negligence with respect to the choice of how much tissue was removed in the surgery, wouldn't there have to be some damages from that just in the simple fact that a larger portion of this person's body was removed than was necessary to perform the procedure that was supposed to be performed?
Well, Your Honor, there was no testimony from the deposition of Ms. Swan or any other witness that there were damages, that she felt that there were damages because the biopsy was larger than she had expected it to be. There was testimony that she was surprised that that much tissue was taken, but there was no testimony about mental anguish or physical problems of any kind associated with the biopsy being larger than it had to be. So I would disagree that there would that in that case, even if we assume that the jury decided negligence based on the size of the biopsy, that that would automatically equate with proximate cause because there was no basis, no evidence for, upon which the jury could base a damage decision based just on that. Mr. Robbins also talked about increased risk of harm associated with the larger biopsy, and the case did not go to the jury on increased risk of harm. That's a different issue, a different standard. There needs to be expert testimony about the percentage of increase of the risk for the jury to base a damage award on that.
All right, so let me back up a little bit. You're saying that there was no argument made to the jury along the lines of this woman had a large portion of her breast removed when all that was needed was, and you know, it's undisputed that all he needed to do was take out this much tinier portion. And for that reason alone, if you agree that that was negligent to have taken that larger amount, that automatically means that my client suffered damages because my client was mutilated to a much greater extent than she needed to be.
That argument was not made, Your Honor. The argument that was made was that that too much breast tissue was taken, which made it harder to heal, which made it likely to get infected, which it did, and that the fungal infection that resulted then caused the necessity for major surgery, mastectomy, and a tram flap procedure. That was the damage claim that was made at
trial. So what you're saying is that, in essence, the plaintiff passed up the small claim, if you will, of I was subjected to a potential deformity that was greater than what was needed because of what happened afterwards was so much more significant in terms of the surgery and the procedures and the pain and suffering and what have you, that that the focus was really on the post-operative situation and not the size of the resection.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The need for what was absolutely major surgery that took a year for her to recover from. And that's particularly true in light of the fact that this is a woman who had already had a partial mastectomy on that breast, and I would think from the standpoint of strategy to try to argue to the jury that because a little bit more breast tissue was taken from a breast that had already had a partial mastectomy, that was the core of their case. I would be surprised if Mr. Robbins would have tried to make that kind of an argument. It was always about the major surgery that resulted.
And with respect to the claim that Dr. Balin didn't properly treat the wound, we don't know whether the jury found that he was negligent in that regard because they could have based their decision on the size of the resection and not the second issue, right?
Correct. We simply don't know. But we do know that the jury decided that there was no proximate cause associated with the negligence that they found, and there was ample evidence at trial from which they could make that determination. There was significant evidence in the medical records of this pre-existing radiation change from Dr. Balin's own biopsy, the pathology results of that. Dr. Dixon Whitmer's initial assessment, which was on paper that the jury saw, was radiation change causing poor vascularization, vascular supply, and non-healing wound. The plastic surgeon, Dr. Danio, another treating physician, his initial assessment of this problem was complex radiation wound. Dr. Danio's note was shown to the jury written before the Ms. Swan ever went to an infectious disease doctor, where he says, you need a tram flap surgery and a mastectomy because of this radiation wound, this non-healing wound due to radiation in your breast. The pathology from the major surgery that was done found no infection at all, but did find radiation change. Ms. Swan continued to have healing problems from the major surgery, the tram flap and the mastectomy, for a year after that surgery, and it was undisputed that there was no infection at that time at all, that it was all about radiation damage to her breast, poor blood supply, poor healing as a result of that. There, in addition to the paper evidence, there was testimony, particularly from Dr. Dixon Whitmer. She's the one who did the mastectomy. She said, I did the mastectomy because of radiation damage to this woman's breast that would not allow it to heal. It had nothing to do with infection. The defense expert, Dr. Abdelmisi, said the same thing. The defense infectious disease expert, Dr. Bacon, said the fungal infection did not harm Ms. Swan. It was it rode along in this non-healing wound, but didn't harm her. It was necrotic tissue from prior radiation. On cross-examination, the plaintiff's infectious disease expert agreed that she had necrotic, dead tissue, poor vascularity as a result of prior radiation. So the jury was free to accept that testimony and reject the contrary testimony that came from the plaintiff about causation, and that's exactly what they did. I still have some time, so I will move to the closing comments unless there's any more questions about the proximate cause issue. It's our position, as you know from the briefs, that all of the arguments with regard to closing comments were waived in one fashion or another. None of them rise to the level of plain error that prejudicially affected substantial rights or compromised the essential integrity of the trial.
The radiologist who was referred to, your opponent says the radiologist would have testified on causation.
I don't believe that's true, Your Honor. The radiologist's testimony had to do simply with what the size of the biopsy should have been, which was a standard of care issue. That had nothing to do with causation. I will speak to that, though, about that issue. My comment about the radiologist sprang from the comment made by Mr. Robbins in his closing that and he used this at the trial and he used it today, that this was the area of concern according to the radiologist, and this is what Dr. Ballin took out. And that was the linchpin of his case on standard of care. And in fact, if you look at the records, and that's at page 143 and 145 of the B-143 and B-145 of the appendix to the answering brief, there's nothing in those radiology reports that says that the radiologist had any area of concern. The concern was Mrs. Swan's. She came to him because she felt an area growing in her breast where she had had cancer before and was concerned. And it later became Dr. Ballin's concern because he could feel it too. She said that the area was growing. The testimony at trial was that there was a fibrous area underneath the scar from the prior mastectomy, which was about 9 centimeters, about three-quarters the size of this tissue that was removed, and that Dr. Ballin wanted to make sure that there was no recurrent cancer in any of that tissue. And because it wasn't just a cyst, something that you could take a small piece of or something that you could aspirate, his judgment was that he needed to take all that tissue to make sure that there was no cancer in any of that tissue. Mr. Robbins suggested in his closing that the radiologist would have said something that was more than what was in his report. That is, that he had a specific area of concern that was this size. And in response to that, it was perfectly appropriate for me to point out that if that were true, don't you think he would have had the radiologist say that? Because it's not in here anywhere. It's not in the radiologist's report. And so that was the reason for my comment. Under Delaware law, The missing witness argument is perfectly proper. There's no case law that would prevent me from doing that. Even the cases that the plaintiff cites from other jurisdictions, from Missouri and from Kentucky, the O'Donnell case and the T.C. Young case, say that if the other side tries to suggest that a witness who's not going to testify would have added something to their case, that it's perfectly acceptable for the opponent to then bring out the fact that that person was not in the courtroom to testify. And again, I think as we've already discussed,
you agree that witness was equally available to both parties.
I agree, Your Honor, that if I wanted to call him, that I would have. But what I would suggest to you that I had no reason to, because I wasn't arguing that he had an area of concern that was tiny. He found assist inside Mrs. Swan's area of concern, which the testimony showed was much larger than this. That is the area of concern. That's clear from the reports themselves. So I had no reason to call him. And it really wasn't something that was emphasized until the closing, that this was something that was according to the radiologist, an area of concern according to the radiologist. And that's what prompted me to make the comment that I did. Briefly, just with regard to the comment concerning...
Are you going to address the aiding and abetting comment?
Yes, I was going to go there now. The plaintiff's standard of care expert, Dr. Reiner, he was a surgeon, it came out on cross-examination that he had given certain opinions to Mr. Robbins, which Mr. Robbins had memorialized in an expert disclosure according to the rules, and had shown Dr. Reiner and said, is this your opinion? And Dr. Reiner had said, yes, it is, and then had provided that to me. And that months later, Dr. Reiner came up with a new opinion that the biopsy was too big, which was a central opinion in the case. All of that came out on cross-examination, that opinion didn't come out until months after he had reviewed all the medical records, seen the operative report, seen the ultrasound reports, known what the radiologist's supposed area of concern was, known what Dr. Ballin had removed. Months after that, he decides that the biopsy is too big. I cross-examined him vigorously about that while he was on the stand to undercut his credibility, because if it took him months later to come up with that opinion, I suggested it was not a credible opinion. And I argued to the jury, in fact, you know, Dr. Ballin didn't have months to pour over the records. He had to make this judgment at the time. So in closing, I brought up, and by the way, that cross-examination was not objected to at the time that Dr. Reiner was on the stand. So all I did in closing was remind the jury that Dr. Reiner had changed, had expanded his opinion months after he'd had the records, and that suggested that if he had done that, that suggested that the plaintiffs felt their case needed bolstering. Otherwise, why come up with another opinion? And I would respectfully submit that that's a perfectly appropriate comment on the evidence and a perfectly appropriate attack in argument on the testimony of an expert. I never used the word conspiracy. I never suggested that there was any conspiracy. I did say, what does that suggest to you about how Mr. Robbins and his expert felt about their case if they thought it needed to be, if they needed a new opinion? And that was based on the cross-examination testimony that the initial opinions and the new opinion had been written up by the two of them together. So I would suggest to you again that was perfectly appropriate argument.
Is that in the record that the two of them wrote the opinion?
Well, it's in discovery deposition and in the cross-examination it came out that they spoke together. Mr. Robbins, after speaking to Dr. Reiner, wrote up the opinion, provided it to the expert to see if it was accurate, his rendition of the opinion, and the expert blessed it, so to speak, and that process took place again when the new opinion was derived. And Dr. Reiner testified that he provided the new opinion after discussions with Mr. Robbins about the case months later.
And is that unusual?
Well, it is not unusual at all for an expert and a lawyer to talk about the case and to discuss the content of an expert disclosure. It is somewhat unusual for an expert several months after he's reviewed the records.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. Is it unusual for the attorney to write up the report after discussing with the expert and then give it to the expert and say, okay, is this Is this your position?
That's not unusual in my experience, because some experts don't want to prepare reports, and they're going to be
right.
deposed anyway.
Right.
So.
Well, and so what I'm trying to get at is, to the extent that the jury was led to believe that, oh, you know, this time the lawyer even wrote up the report for the expert, as if that's not the way it's always done.
Well,
isn't that a misleading characterization of the facts?
It would be misleading if I had said that, and that's not what I said, Your Honor. The emphasis I placed was on the expansion of the opinion months after the original opinion was produced. That was the emphasis of the cross-examination. That was the emphasis of my argument to the jury, that his opinion had changed and so was therefore less credible. With regard to the to some of these, Mr. Robbins didn't get a chance to address in his argument, and so I hesitate to go into them. But he did mention the comment regarding Dr. Dixon Whitmer, where I had said to the jury that he could contact Dr. Dixon Whitmer whenever he wanted to, and that I needed to take her deposition. That comment, again, like the comment, like the previous comment, was made in response to an argument made by Mr. Robbins in his closing. Once it was clear that Dr. Dixon Whitmer, a neutral witness, a treating physician, was going to very strongly disagree with the plaintiff's case on proximate cause about why the surgery was done, Mr. Robbins, as I would expect, attacked her vigorously and suggested that she was biased. And he said to the jury in closing, she was biased, she acted defensive when I questioned her, and he suggested to the jury that there was something improper about my sending her a letter before she was deposed to explain to her what questions I was going to ask. And he said, so Mr. Ballinger sent her a letter to tell her what the defense case was before she was questioned, and he suggested that there was something improper about that, an argument not unlike the one I made about Dr. Reiner, that she changed her testimony in response to the letter I had sent her in between her discovery deposition and her trial deposition. And that she had an attorney at her deposition, was the only treating physician who came to her deposition with an attorney. In response to all of those comments, I thought it was important to explain to the jury why I needed to take formal steps to address Dr. Dixon Whitmer. And so I said, he represents the patient. He can talk to her whenever she can. I need to go through the deposition process. So I conducted a deposition, and I asked her why she did the surgery. That was the reason for the comment. Again, I think it was a perfectly legitimate comment on the evidence.
I want to ask you again about your statement, and I've got it in front of me now. What does that say about what Mr. Robbins and Dr. Reiner felt about the strength of these opinions, if they felt they had to add on something new to strengthen their case? Where's the factual support in the record that Mr. Robbins felt anything about the strength of the case, or the factual support in the record that he had to add something new to strengthen the case?
Well, on cross-examination, Dr. Reiner testified that he was contacted by Mr. Robbins to discuss the issue of the size of the biopsy, and as a result of those discussions, this new expert disclosure was prepared, which criticized Dr. Ballin for the size of the biopsy.
Well, how does that reflect on what Mr. Robbins felt about the strength of the case?
Or
adding something new, or fabricating evidence. Isn't that what you're
saying? Absolutely. I was not suggesting that any evidence was fabricated. I was suggesting that the opinion was less credible because it took the expert months to come up with it. That's the point that I was trying to make. And it was clear that it was prompted by communication between Mr. Robbins and the expert. I would go back to the point on that, Your Honor, even if the court decides that was an improper comment, that it was a standard of care expert and so was not central to where the case turned, which was proximate cause. Dr. Reiner was a surgeon. He testified on the breaches of the standard of care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have 38 seconds.
Yeah, I don't have much time, but I would like to touch real quickly on Dr. Reiner. The reason he expanded his opinion is because he had not read Dr. Balin's deposition, and he testified to that. He didn't testify that I somehow caused him to change his opinion. He said, I had not read his transcript before the discovery response was done. I read it before my deposition, and that's why my opinion expanded, because I learned that he did a wide resection and not a biopsy. Dr. Balin himself said that radiologist's area of concern was too small to aspirate. That's, I think, A51. So to say all of a sudden this is new evidence and I'm saying something the radiologist hadn't said is not true. Dr. Balin said it himself.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement, and we will adjourn for today.